With candidates starting to announce themselves for the upcoming civic election in October of 2021, we are trying to get in touch with as many different candidates as we possibly can to make sure that the electorate know who it is that's stepping up to potentially fill some seats in city council, because it looks like there's going to be a pretty big change up when the votes actually do happen next year. So we're very, very fortunate today to be joined by one of those candidates. Today we're being joined with by Anna Murphy, who is the candidate for Ward 8.
Yes, that's correct.
And so we're going to learn a bit about Anna. So Anna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with sort of the broad introduction. Who are you?
Well, as you said, you know, my name is Anna Murphy, and yeah, I am vying to be a councillor for Ward 8. I have served the community of Calgary throughout the last 2 years in various volunteer roles. I've served as the director of fund development for Skipping Stone, the director of business development for Calgary Pride, and also was the volunteer coordinator and committee member with Canadian Rockies Gay Rodeo Association. In addition to my time on volunteer boards, I have also served for 10 years in the retail industry and specialty and luxury. I've also done 2 micro certificates in urban planning and economic development, both awarded from Oxford and Harvard, being further inspired to enroll in Cambridge in the studies of international relations. Also grew up in rural Alberta. So all of that is to say that I'm tremendously confident in my ability to bring a robust voice to council that is effective in bringing forward authentic representation and diverse representation when it comes to policy and platform that makes sure that our communities in Calgary remain sustainable and livable in the coming years.
Okay. Where in rural Alberta did you grow up?
I grew up in, so I was born in Wainwright.
Okay.
My father lives in Bonnyville, grandparents stayed in Wainwright, and then my mom lives down in Medicine Hat. So I, you know, growing up, because it's a split family, grew up traveling across all of Alberta.
Okay.
in rural communities. Dad also was a semi-professional team roper, so summers were spent going down the road to various different small rodeos in various different rural communities. So very acutely familiar with rural Alberta and the dynamics within.
Okay. Why Ward 8?
So Ward 8 is one of the best representations of the cultural, the vibrant cultural diversity and richness that we have within Calgary. We have everything from, you know, folks up in Mount Royal who are more affluent, to those down, say, at the safe consumption site who are experiencing poverty and are some of our most marginalized. So we have a very broad range of Calgarians living within the ward. We also have everything in the middle, from young professionals, students, young families. And, you know, one of the biggest focuses of my campaign and foundational pieces of my platform is small business. Ensuring that, you know, the backbone of our local economies are able to not only survive, but thrive in the days ahead as we navigate COVID-19. And so one of the best wards for small business where there's a large concentration is Ward 8.
Okay. Obviously, it's still very early on in the campaign. What do you think it is, if I'm not, I don't live in Ward 8, so... You know, you don't have to convince me. But if I did live in Ward 8, what would you want me as a voter to know about you to convince me that you're deserving of the vote?
Yeah. So, great question. You know, when we look at where Calgary is currently, you know, post-pandemic, Calgary was going through an economic downturn due to a drop in our energy prices and the energy market. now with COVID and seeing our economy having to have been shut down for, you know, 3 months in the very least, some industries are still not back online. I know that Calgary and everyday hardworking Calgarians are hurting. I know that they are laying awake at night filled with worry and anxiety about how do I keep a roof over my head? How, if I am a single parent, do I secure food for my child? Or if I'm a single parent, how do I go back into the workforce when I don't have adequate access to things such as childcare? If I'm unemployed, such as a large amount of Calgarians are right now, considering the fact we have a 15.5% unemployment rate, how do I go about finding gainful employment that not only pays me a livable wage, but allows me to do more than just merely survive? And so understanding that is, and being able to bring a voice to council that understands the importance of economic diversification, understanding that when we say economic diversification, we're not saying that we don't understand the relevance of our energy industry, because our energy industry is relevant, if not only for the families whose livelihoods are dependent upon, but speaking more to how do we promote greater growth and investment in areas such as tourism, arts, culture, our makers, our entrepreneurs within this city. How do we go about fostering better relationships with our post-secondary so that we do create a hub in this city that is appealing to technology, to the technology sector, so that they create greater growth? We saw a great initiative done by SAIT recently in opening up the, I believe it's the School of Advanced Technology in downtown. So that's what I want residents of Ward 8 to understand, is that I am acutely aware that one of the biggest issues that is on Calgarians' minds, specifically in Ward 8, is we need to have a strong economic recovery in the years coming, and it needs to be sustainable.
Okay. What are the big areas of opportunity? One of the challenges that the City Council has, I'll say, been accused of over the last, especially a couple of years, certainly with this council, is that it's been extremely divisive to the point where the mayor did bring in a mediator to try to address the toxic culture that existed on council. How are you going to, if you're elected, how are you going to, A, avoid that toxicity, and B, help move council in a direction where it can be more productive and less toxic than it has been?
Yeah. I'm a firm believer in meeting folks where they're at, and doing away with this us versus them narrative that we see, whether it's in council, whether it's provincially, honestly, whether it's pretty much anything in the world nowadays, where we see this us versus them. We need to be able to have these open-ended conversations, understanding that it's okay to have different views. It's okay to not agree with everything that's being put forward. That is how you build a city that works for all Calgarians. So, you know, do I necessarily agree with every current sitting member of council? No. But do I understand that, yeah, we need to be able to work together because that is what is in the best interest of Calgarians? Absolutely. So I think, you know, being able to go into it and understanding that, hey, we may have vastly, vastly different views on how we create the Calgary of tomorrow, shall we say, but by exchanging these ideas, by exchanging these views, that is how, in fact, we bring forward authentic representation for all of Calgary. And yeah, we might have to give a little bit. We might have to move a little bit, and that's okay. And so what I would put to voters is that they understand who they are sending to council. Are you sending someone to council that is willing to work with anyone, regardless of their viewpoints, regardless of their political stripes? Understanding that council is meant to be nonpartisan, that is the joy of municipal politics, or are you sending someone that has shown that they, you know, at times aren't, you know, the most collegial to their fellow members on council.
It's interesting that you bring up the question of partisanship, because this municipal election, the provincial government has already announced, is going to have elements of provincial partisanship, if not federal partisanship, involved. It's been well established that the provincial government and Jason Kenney intend to hold a referendum on equalization at the same time as the municipal election. Now, there's a lot of different theories as to why that referendum's being held, but it, we've on the show, we've had constitutional lawyers, we've had economists, and the overwhelming consensus is that this referendum, in regards to equalization, accomplishes absolutely nothing. The provincial government is already at the table with the federal government twice a year discussing equalization, so it doesn't force any conversation. It doesn't have any force of effect in regards to any sort of legal standing. But there's a lot of people who are speculating that it's designed not to actually address anything to do with equalization. It's more designed to polarize the municipal elections. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the provincial referendum being held at the same time as the municipal election? And how do you plan to navigate that smokescreen that appears to be being put up?
So we saw this provincial government a few months ago, put forward the, we're going to add a referendum regarding equalization onto the municipal ballot. And what that does is it dilutes the local issues, which quite frankly are what Calgarians should be going to the ballot on during a municipal election. We shouldn't be going to the ballot on provincial and, as you said, quite frankly, it's a federal issue. It is not a municipal issue. The reality of why we've seen the province do this, in addition to the referendum question, they have also rammed through Bill 29, which changes how candidates can go about fundraising. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, allowing for big money to buy elections across this province. And all of that is to say that they quite frankly are holding our local democracy hostage in order to play partisan politics, and to see councils, not just within Calgary, but councils across this province, be steered more in a political leaning direction. Not only is that not democracy, it's not who we are as Albertans. Mm-hmm. It's not who we are as Canadians. The focus needs to be on the issues which matter to Calgarians. So talking about, again, strong economic recovery, not getting bogged down in the minutia of a referendum question. Because quite frankly, there is nothing that I can do as a municipal level councillor in regards to the referendum, mm-hmm. Or in regards to the transfer payments that come from Ottawa. That is so beyond my scope as a municipal councillor. My focus throughout this entire election will be to stay focused on the needs of Ward 8 and the needs of Calgarians. And quite frankly, that is ensuring, as I mentioned earlier, that the backbone of our local economies are able to thrive. So locally owned, family operated businesses are able to continue to create the jobs in our communities, are able to not be bogged down by $100,000 tax bills, quite frankly, that they cannot afford. Understanding that we need to focus on, yes, fiscal responsibility that pays attention to our needs in this moment, understanding that Calgary is not immune to the global economic recession, the sharpest and deepest downturn outside of wartime that the world has ever experienced. And so, yeah, we do need to focus on our needs so that we can afford our wants in the future, while doing so not on the backs of our most marginalized. So that's quite frankly how you don't get bogged down in the referendum question.
Okay.
You don't address it.
Are you concerned at all that there are going to be candidates in the municipal election who are going to try to force the municipal election to be about the referendum question? I mean, the scenario that we've already heard presented is the idea that you can have a candidate who says, I want to be clear where I stand during this election. I fully support Canada or Alberta voting to get rid of the equalization because Alberta first or make Alberta great again or one of those variants.
Yes.
How do you stand on that, Anna Murphy? How are you going to respond to somebody who asks that question?
I would say, quite frankly, Alberta has already been great and will continue to be great. And the way that we continue to be great is not creating more partisanship and divisiveness in our communities by trying to pander to this alt-right, quite frankly, leaning ideology of a particular group that thinks that Alberta separatism is going to be good for Albertans. And again, I would circle it back to the fact that referendum is so beyond what a municipal council can have any influence over. The focus of a municipal council needs to be on the local issues. How do you get, you know, if it's coming down to roads, if it's coming down to planning, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, density and good urban planning. So we need to be talking about that. What does density look like? What does good urban planning look like? That's what you're talking about at municipal level council. You're not talking about federal issue, and you're not talking about these two big personalities having this partisanship, ideological battle with one another. Let the province and the feds deal with that. Don't undermine our local democracy by letting your dirty laundry spill over into it and holding local elections hostage as a result.
One of the big frustrations that Calgarians have expressed has to do around the question of property taxes and revenue. So do you have any sort of ideas for how you'd like to make revenue for the city more reliable, more consistent, without increasing property taxes on people's homes catastrophically?
We have a broken system. Our tax system, quite frankly, is broken. It is the only way that we have to generate revenue in the city, and that's outlined in the Municipal Government Act. But what we have done in this city is we've painted ourselves into a corner where property taxes work really well when times are good because we are so heavily, heavily, heavily reliant upon business. But again, we need to understand what that business was. That business was huge oil and gas companies that had bottom lines of millions of dollars. So they could absorb a $100,000 tax bill. Now that we've seen those businesses vacate downtown office space, which I think the last figures were around 30-35% of downtown office space is sitting vacant, or something like one in four office towers are completely empty, you don't have those huge companies paying into property taxes. So what we saw the city then do was we transferred it on to the businesses that were left. Who are they? They're small and medium enterprises. They're locally family-owned businesses that, quite frankly, do not have the balance sheets of big, huge oil and gas companies. So we need to look at addressing. You know, we saw an independent panel on property tax put forward recommendations on, hey, here are some creative ways that we can go about addressing this broken system. But you need to work collaboratively with the province because at the end of the day, property taxes, that comes down to you got to play ball with the province and work collaboratively with them to address that. I don't think that we should be raising taxes on Calgarians at a time when they are most in need, making them pay more at a time when they're earning less. Again, it goes back to we need to have that fiscal responsibility, very strong fiscal responsibility at a time when saying times are tough is a gross understatement at this point. We've been hit on both sides from an economic downturn caused by oil and gas, other side by a global pandemic. And so, yeah, we do need to look at investing first and foremost in our needs as a community, then looking at our wants. And so, yeah, that might mean maybe we cut things where we can cut, but not this slash and burn that some folks will quite frankly be talking about. There's no easy, simple solution. You can't snap your fingers and say, hey, I'm going to cut taxes. Well, if you're going to cut taxes, you better get ready to start cutting frontline services. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, hey, we're going to do tax reform, because, again, you also need to play ball. So we need to look at how do we go about painting ourselves out of this corner that we currently find ourselves in, and doing so being very conscientious and being very accountable to the taxpayer.
It's hard to have a conversation right now in regards to cutting taxes or cutting services without it bringing up some level of conversation in regards to the whole defunding the police. The reality is that the conversations around systemic racism and systemic prejudice within Calgary have been at a level that I don't think we've ever seen them at before. And part of that conversation includes this broadly interpreted, let's say, notion of defunding the police. Where do you stand on that?
We need to ensure that our frontline services, so if that's police, fire, ambulance, we need to ensure that they are adequately funded to be providing top quality service to Calgarians. Specifically in regards to police, we need to ensure that they are adequately funded to ensure that they are maintaining law and order within our society, but then reinvesting funds into things such as affordable housing, such as food security, such as mental health support, addiction support. We saw recently on Twitter and social media, they were bringing up how Calgary invested in this, what can best be described almost like a tank vehicle for police. I've lived in Calgary for 6 years. I've lived in Alberta my entire life. I don't ever recall a moment where we have had such a need. You know, we hosted the G8 once. I don't think we need to have that kind of investment into that kind of resources. So again, it's looking at, are they adequately funded? To ensure that, yes, they are maintaining law and order, but then reinvesting so that we can address some of the very critical needs of the most marginalized in our communities, which, quite frankly, a good chunk of those who are most marginalized in our communities are BIPOC individuals. And so we do need to ensure that they have access to affordable housing, food security, mental health and addiction resources. And so if we can reinvest some of our budget into that, and if we have to pull from the police budget, which I believe currently stands as the most, they are the most funded police force in the entire country, while again, making sure that, yes, we're not talking about taking away law and order in our community. We're talking about shifting the priorities. Right now, police are taking on responsibilities that, quite frankly, they shouldn't be taking on. They are having to work as mental health resource officers. They're having to work as social workers, all of these different things that, quite frankly, that's not their job. So again, if we reinvest funding into other key areas that are a critical need within our community, we'll start to see a shift.
Okay. I want to challenge you a little bit on the armored vehicle that the police, because it's not just the Calgary police that have gotten some flack. Edmonton police recently did a meet and greet with their new armored vehicle as well. I guess the question that I would posit, we're seeing increases in firearms violence, particularly in Calgary. Enough so that the City of Calgary has put together a task force to address specifically that issue. We're also seeing increased arrests where people are being arrested with firearms that aren't legally allowed. Do you think that there's an argument to be made, given the escalation of gun violence that we're seeing in this city, that the police having access to an armored vehicle that is not only going to protect them, but protect Calgarians, because we have had active shooter incidents here in Calgary, it's not, while it may provide a slightly more visually intimidating effect on people who aren't familiar with that equipment, is it really that different than a police officer wearing a bulletproof vest? I mean, hopefully, the number of shootings that we've seen in Calgary, I can only think of one or two of police officers over the last couple of years, but hopefully a police officer never has to use the ballistic vest that they wear on every single shift. But I don't know that I would want to be the guy who says, I don't need those vests. Do you think that there's a parallel to be drawn between that and an armored vehicle?
You know, I don't disagree that, yes, there is a parallel to be drawn between a bulletproof vest and an armored vehicle. But what I also try and be very conscientious of is the fact that I have never had to walk out of my house and be stereotyped because of the color of my skin. I can walk down the street and see police officers coming towards me in uniform and smile and wave and have an okay relationship with them because I am a white woman. So while, yes, I definitely agree that our police force, again, needs to be adequately funded so that they do have the tools to do the job adequately so that we keep our frontline individuals safe when they are dealing with, say, an active shooter or, you know, an incident that requires them to have certain beyond just a bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
But again, looking at that and having that conversation of how does that look when, say, we're investing, I think Edmonton spent $1 million on their armored vehicle. Don't quote me, but that's ballpark.
They're not cheap. We can go with that.
Yeah. They're not cheap. How does that look to a community that is having trouble securing food, that is having trouble accessing mental health and addictions resources? We know, and you know, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you sit on, when you invest in social supports, proper, adequate resources, you see crime go down. So that would be one of the questions that I would ask is, well, why is crime maybe spiking in these certain incidents? And again, if we reinvest some of the funding into addressing some of these areas of need, I would argue, and I would think that the evidence would support me in this argument, that we would actually see incidents go down.
I don't think there's any question that the you know, crime in many ways is a result to the economic disparity that we see. To me, that's a no-brainer. Anybody who argues against that, okay, use your words. But I don't think there's any question that poverty, lack of education, lack of opportunity drive criminality to some degree. The way that I kind of look at the RVs that the police are getting is, we have seen in Alberta incidents where there have been terrorist attacks. That's a reality. We saw that in Edmonton just a couple years ago, where somebody used a van as a terrorist weapon.
Yes.
And you know, I could be wrong, but I haven't heard CPS or EPS arguing that they should be using their RVs as patrol vehicles. I would wholeheartedly agree that would be a grossly inappropriate use of resources. But given the rise of violence that we're seeing today, and given the increased, quite frankly, terrorism that we're seeing, to me it seems like as long as they're not using it, you know, if CPS was to roll up on a mental health check with their RV, we have some problems here. But if they're not using it for situations that aren't inappropriate, to me it seems like it's a tool.
Yeah.
The damage that somebody can do with an RV, I mean, it's not weaponized. It's scary looking for sure, and there's probably some value to that. But the damage that a police officer could do with just the weapons that they keep in their vehicle versus what they could do with the RV, it seems like it's a bit of a red herring to me. I probably have a little bit of a bias on that, just given what I do. But I just wanted to explore that a bit with you. Are there any other issues that you want Calgarians, and particularly Calgarians in Ward 8, to be aware of?
Yeah. You know, we, in addition to the economy, in addition to addressing systemic racism, another issue that has been front and center in the recent days, and that's partly due to the health minister phoning a member of Calgary Council to accost her of mm-hmm. her opinion in regards to EMS dispatch, is the decentralizing of EMS dispatch.
And so where do you stand on that? What are your thoughts on the whether or not EMS dispatch should be moved away from the city or moved to the province or all of that?
So I'll give you the politician answer, and then I'll loop it into also a personal story that I heard through this summer, actually, when I injured myself. So we have a good system in Calgary. Not only is it adequate, it is world-renowned. However, what we're seeing and what I've heard through the grapevine is that when we have, I believe, their red alert or some of like the most severe calls, is we have an ambulance shortage. And so we need to ensure that we have, again, making sure that our system is properly funded to ensure that we have adequate resources here within Calgary to be responding to that. That should be the conversation, not let's fix what's not broke, as the saying is. And that, quite frankly, is exactly what the province is doing with the whole conversation in regards to decentralizing EMS services. And I heard that directly this summer. I was out scootering, and unfortunately...
One of the Lime ones?
I was on the Lime ones.
Oh, those things are death traps.
my first time on it, and I had the good fortune of running myself over with it, to the point where I could not walk, and I did need to phone for resources, i.e., EMS mm-hmm. to come and pick me up and take me to the emergency room to get stitches and all the whole nine yards. And I did have a conversation with the paramedic about, you know, hey, where do you stand on cuts and what the province is doing? And he made it very clear that what the province is putting forward will not provide a better system for Calgarians. In fact, it will worsen the system.
And that's from a frontline paramedic.
And that is from a frontline paramedic. I'm in the back of the bus, you know, while he's treating me, while we're on our way to the hospital. And that was the conversation that I had with him. So again, as someone who is running and as someone who is confident on winning, if elected and if sitting in that position, that's whose voice matters the most to me, is the people who, quite frankly, are the ones doing it. I'm not in the ambulance. I'm not doing it. So I would be relying upon the genuine and authentic engagement of our frontline workers that say, hey, don't touch this. If you touch this, what's going to happen is you're actually going to create a worse system for Calgarians. And quite frankly, especially when we're talking about EMS, that can mean the difference between life and death for somebody. Mm-hmm. If we are now having to send, we're, and that goes back to the point that I made about ensuring that we have adequate resources for ambulances, we're already seeing them having to be pulled in from places like Cochrane or Okotoks or Airdrie or all of that. I mean, it's great that we see a regional network that works cohesively, but if we now start to decentralize that and, again, make this system that's not going to improve services, again, that could mean life and death for someone that is one of those code red calls that are coming in. and why the province can't understand that, why the province is superseding the municipalities. It's interesting. It's quite contradictory. You know, we hear the province talk about, oh, you know, we're not going to meddle. We're not going to, you know, figure it out yourselves. But then they go in and supersede municipalities on certain issues. So, yeah, why the province can't hear that genuine cause for concern, it makes no sense to me.
Okay.
It makes no sense to me. But we need to be able to... I made a comment on social media that it is not the role of a municipality to slip blindly into submission on decisions made by the province. And that goes for the decentralization of EMS services. That goes towards their position on Bill 29. Municipalities don't have to sit idly by. We can speak up and say, what you're doing is actually wrong. And, you know, it might be out of our jurisdiction. It might, you know, ruffle a few feathers. But at the end of the day, when you sit on council and when you sit on an elected position on a municipality, you still have a responsibility to use your voice and your position to speak out on the issues which impact your constituents.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I want to thank you again for taking the time to sit down with us today. And I honestly do hope that, I mean, we're still more than a year away from the, let's call it excitement.
Is that what they call it?
I'm sure there's lots of words we could use to describe what this municipal election is going to be, but we try to keep the profanity to a minimum on this show, so we'll just go with excitement. But I hope that we'll be able to have you back on sometime in the next year before the vote happens, and get a little bit of an update on where you're at, how things are going, and if we've learned nothing about Alberta politics, municipal politics, things can change on a dime. So I imagine that there will be no shortage of conversations that we can follow up on.
Yeah, no. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been an incredible conversation, and yeah, I definitely would love to come back.
One other thing I should say before we let you go, if people want to know more about you, more about your positions, do you have any sort of social media accounts or a website that people can go to learn more about Anna Murphy?
Yeah, so folks can go to right now. I am on Instagram. So the Instagram handle is @TheAnnaMurphy. So TheAnnaMurphy. Same with on Twitter. A website, I was just sitting down with a branding strategist yesterday, and the website is going to be forthcoming very, very soon. We're meeting next Friday to do a photo shoot for photos for all of that. So website currently no. Also websites do cost money, and not being independently wealthy, even, you know, a few dollars a month can mean the difference even for me.
Yep.
for putting food on my table. So navigating that currently, but it is forthcoming.
Excellent.
So right now it's Twitter, Instagram. I also have a Facebook page. I got scolded the other day for I keep neglecting my Facebook page. I do my Instagram, I do my Twitter. I for whatever reason forget. It's Facebook. A full-time job, honestly.
It is.
Social media can be a full-time job.
Well, hopefully you get a social media volunteer to help you out with that.
Hopefully, yes. Volunteer is the key word.
There you go. So if you're somebody who wants to volunteer to help Anna with her social media, you have her Instagram and her Twitter. And thank you again.
Thank you so much, Nate.
As always, if you appreciate the kind of content that we're trying to produce here at The Breakdown, please consider signing up as a monthly supporter at our Patreon site at www.patreon.com/thebreakdownab. And if you're listening to the audio version of our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and a rating. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at The Breakdown AB. Thank you for your attention.